Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton was in Des Moines on Monday morning for a forum on health care that was broadcast nationally on ABC television. Radio Iowa's O.K. Henderson reported.
The event, arranged by Good Morning America producers, featured Clinton and a group of 200 invited guests. The former First Lady told the group she learned a lot when she tried but failed to enact a universal health care system when her husband was president.
I believe the American people are going to make this an issue in the 2008 campaign, and as president, I believe I learned a lot back in 1993 and 94 about how to bring us together to actually start down the path toward universal health care coverage. So I'm very excited about it because I know that we can do this in America if we put our minds to it.
According to Clinton, that goal is more achievable today than it was 14 years ago, partly because the number of uninsured Americans has grown, but also because so many people have had problems getting and keeping affordable health care insurance coverage. Radio Iowa, I'm O.K. Henderson.
Clinton was joined by former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack and wife Christy. The former First Lady of the state remembered how then-First Lady Hillary Clinton held a fundraiser in Washington, D.C. for Vilsack during his first run for the governor's office.
I've learned a lot about loyalty in the last few months during Tom's presidential run. And that's one reason why I'm here today.
Christy Vilsack's late brother, Tom Bell, worked alongside Hillary Rodham on the Watergate Committee 3 decades ago. Christy Vilsack called the former First Lady fearless.
One quality that draws me to Senator Clinton as a candidate for president is this idea of being a pioneer, daring to do something that other people find too daunting. At this time in our country's history, we need a leader who is not afraid.
So during the Monday visit, they endorsed her presidential bid. Vilsack saying Mrs. Clinton was one of just 2 nationally prominent Democrats who were willing to help him raise campaign cash in 1998. Vilsack was running a long shot but ultimately successful first campaign for governor.
In politics, loyalty is a commodity that is rare. I don't forget those things. And I don't think we in politics should ever forget what people have done to help us.
Vilsack, who ended his presidential campaign last month, had called on Congress to cut off funding for the war in Iraq. Senator Clinton referred to that stance.
He stood up for ending the war in Iraq the right way, for telling the president, you're on the wrong course. And I'm not sure, Tom, we're going to be able to change the president's mind. We're sure trying.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck is right. But I can tell you this, Tom Vilsack and I will campaign together around this country and make it clear that when I'm president, we will end the war in Iraq and begin to bring our troops home.
You can hear that entire news conference online at radioiowa.com. Kansas Senator Sam Brownback was back in Iowa Monday, hoping to build name recognition as he runs for the GOP presidential nomination. He knows he doesn't have the big names of some other candidates, but Brownback said he's hoping voters get to know him and predicts he will have raised far less than some other Republican candidates, like Rudy Giuliani and John McCain, he said. That's to be expected.
Candidates should not be discounted because in their first reporting period or two, they don't have the same amount of numbers as somebody that's been a national candidate for some time.
While he's not as well known as some of his rivals, Brownback says his conservative credentials will eventually take hold with Iowa voters. He's not the only one playing the underdog card. Former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson admits he isn't a big-name candidate now, but says it'll all change with a win in the 2008 Iowa caucuses.
And now I'm on the front page of everybody, and immediately I go to the front of the pack.
Are you having deja vu yet? Thompson has been in Iowa each weekend this year.
I spent a lot of time, and I have received a tremendous amount of encouragement from the people of Iowa, especially the caucus goers.
Thompson claims he's winning the ground game in Iowa because he's outlined specific proposals for dealing with Iraq and for reforming the U.S. health care system. 3 organizations have shaken hands on a plan here in the state where candidates do retail campaigning, where they darn near have to shake the hand of every voter. They'll ask their members to ask every campaign visitor some tough questions. John Hale, AARP's state president, says the group's 380,000 Iowa members will be encouraged to quiz the candidates on health care and Social Security reform as they campaign through Iowa.
The largest and most significant campaign in the association's 49-year history.
the AARP, Service Employees International Union, and the Business Roundtable have struck the alliance. John Ashenbrenner of Des Moines-based Principal Financial, which is part of the Business Roundtable, says there's a reason an insurance company is now part of this coalition pushing the candidates to address health care reform.
Issues around health care and around retirement security in the United States have become so serious that they really threaten the prosperity of Americans, of our businesses, and of the economy in general.
Former Iowa Governor Terry Branstad is now the president of Des Moines University, which trains osteopathic doctors, and he's part of the effort.
We have a unique opportunity here in Iowa because of the First in the Nation caucuses and because of the attention of the candidates, and I think it's critically important that these critical issues of health care and long-term financial security be addressed.
The three groups intend to schedule up to 40 forums in Iowa between now and caucus night to pressure the candidates to address those issues. A story of world diplomacy, secret agents, government misdeeds, and international intrigue was the reason a scheduled speaker couldn't make it to the University of Iowa this week. The speaker who took the place of CIA agent Valerie Plame was her husband, Joseph Wilson.
Because of the status of her really very sensitive negotiations with her former employee, the Central Intelligence Agency, and certain demands that they're attempting to make upon her, it would be, according to her lawyers, inappropriate for her to be speaking publicly at this stage.
It's still a hot potato. Just days ago, Lewis Scooter Libby was convicted of lying and obstructing an investigation into the outing of Plame in 2004, allegedly because of Wilson's criticism of the president's Iraq strategy. A deliberate leak, she's said, endangered her, trashed her CIA assignment, and may have put a lot of other agents at risk by blowing their cover, too. On Monday in Iowa City, Wilson talked about his book, which he says was approved by the CIA before it was published. In The Politics of Truth, he described a career in world politics as a diplomat and often also a news commentator. He spoke Monday night in the Memorial Union as part of the University of Iowa Lecture Series. Ethics in Wartime, the topic of a Thursday night speech by a political science professor from the U.S. Naval Academy. Professor Stephen Rogge says this new war is taking us into new ethical territory.
My particular concern, since I'm teaching young officers, is the way that power and responsibility, leadership is being ceded to, I think, a pretty close to unprecedented degree to military people. Traditionally, the position that the military has been very comfortable with has been that they carry out the execution of the direction that's provided by the civilian leadership. Something very different is going on here now.
Rogge says war ought to be a last resort for policymakers, but he says the development of precision weapons like smart bombs that can hit an inch-wide target from miles away make very deadly warfare seem risk-free and too tempting. The widow of NBC News correspondent David Bloom came to Iowa to tell us about the medical condition that killed her husband. He was covering the war in Iraq when he died suddenly in April of 2003 from deep vein thrombosis. It's a blood clot that can form in a vein and travel throughout the body. Melanie Bloom says her husband's death was a bitter irony because they knew he was on a dangerous assignment covering the war. But they found out this causes more deaths than AIDS and breast cancer combined, 300,000 per year.
Someone is overweight, birth control pills, hormone replacement therapy, and pregnancy increases a woman's risk. So if you have, and age is a factor, there are so many. So if you have someone, you know, 60 years old on hormone replacement therapy and she's 30 pounds overweight and she takes a 5-hour flight, she has four risk factors right then. So it can happen at any time. It can come on suddenly or it can be a slower, more controlled onset, for instance, if you're in the hospital with cancer.
Bloom spoke at Iowa Methodist Medical Center in Des Moines Thursday and Iowa City Friday. Almost missed one political candidate, a retired Presbyterian minister from Council Bluffs, kicked off his campaign this week to unseat Republican Congressman Steve King. Reverend Rob Hubler is also a Navy veteran who served in Vietnam. A state senator from Des Moines this week pleaded not guilty to extortion charges. Senator Matt McCoy, a 40-year-old Democrat, is accused of threatening to derail a security firm's state contract. McCoy, with his lawyer at his side, spoke to reporters just outside the federal courthouse on Thursday afternoon.
Today was the first step in a process that we hope will reveal all the facts, and we can be vindicated in every way. I'm looking forward to having this behind me. I'm looking forward to my day in court.
McCoy's trial is scheduled for June 4th. The judge asked McCoy to surrender his passport. This is why your parents worried about you. An Eastern Iowa boy died Thursday after an accidental shooting Wednesday in southern Clinton County. Dave Vickers sent us the report.
7-year-old Blake Hargrave of Lomore had been shot in the eye with a pellet gun. He was transported to the Genesis Hospital in DeWitt, then transferred to Genesis East in Davenport, and then to University Hospital in Iowa City, where he was pronounced dead Thursday morning. The Clinton County Sheriff's Office states that Hargrave had been hunting rabbits with an older sibling and the sibling's friend, and the boys were shooting near a junk car when the incident occurred. The identity of the other two boys and further details about the incident are not being released yet, pending the completion of the investigation. Command School Superintendent Tom Parker says the district brought in extra counselors and support staff on Thursday to talk with the elementary school students. In Clinton, I'm Dave Vickers, Radio Iowa News.
Farmers this spring are planning to put more corn in the ground than they've planted in over 60 years. The Federal Department of Agriculture survey found nationwide farmers intend to plant 15% more corn than they did last year. Iowa Corn Growers President-elect Tim Recker says it's good news.
90.5 million acres, that's a huge number. And what the report tells me and is that corn growers are speaking louder and clearer. We're going to plant enough corn for both the livestock sector and our growing ethanol economy.
The Fayette County farmer says Friday's announcement puts to rest one doubt about the use of corn to make ethanol.
There was some debate over whether we're going to use our corn to feed livestock or we're going to use it to fuel the world. And I think at least right now in this year, we can do both.
The weather rises to the status of news when it's 8 days since a St. Pat's snowfall. The Federal Emergency Management Agency is working to award recovery funds to Iowa under the federal disaster declaration brought on by winter storms at the start of this month. Dan Best is federal coordinating officer for FEMA, says the federal grants will be limited to local and state governments, and the nonprofit electric companies will see the bulk of the federal money.
91% of our preliminary damage assessment was for electrical, the electrical grid, and for replacing damage to the electrical grid, down wires, down poles, down miles of distribution and transmission lines. The other big category was Category A, which is debris removal, and that was a lot of down trees and tree limbs and that sort of stuff, and cleaning up that activity, making sure the roads are open and all that sort of stuff. So those are the two big activities.
Best says FEMA will set a grant amount for each government or nonprofit business, then adjust that as the work gets done and the actual cost of the work is determined. Longer-term forecasts show this summer may be hotter than average. Iowa State University horticulturist Richard Duran says it's not time to dig up the yard and put in cactus. For one thing, he says there aren't a lot of drought-resistant plants for your vegetable garden.
Actually, in a vegetable garden, most crops require about 1 inch of water per week during the growing season. So there aren't too many crops that are extremely drought tolerant.
Plan to water more, he says, and water deep. A lack of water had a startling effect on weather records last summer. Normally, May is the peak month of the year for tornadoes, but climatologist Ken Dewey says there wasn't a single one.
In this case, it wasn't a cycle in sense of tornadoes up, tornadoes down. It was a cycle of drought that was affecting the tornadoes.
Dewey says the dry weather is also to blame for soaring summer temperatures last year, but he says this year conditions are different.
As we've seen the temperatures swing from teens in a blizzard a few weeks ago to 80-degree weather in the middle of the month, that shows us the energy's there, the moisture has been there this winter, and we expect moisture to remain here over the next month or so. So climatologically speaking, this will be more active than last year. Last year we had no tornadoes in the month of May. So I know that's not going to happen again.
He's with the High Plains Regional Climate Center. March went out on a mild note, though state climatologist Harry Hilliker remembers that it came in like a big, cold, wet lion. After the big storm, though, it didn't take long to warm things up.
In fact, thus far, we're running about 6.5 degrees warmer than usual for the month of March as a whole. And that's almost getting us in the top 10 territory as far as warmest marches.
And yet we got 7 inches of snow, almost all of it, in the big blizzard right at the first of the month. making it the snowiest March in 8 years. Mother Nature lit up the night in more ways than one Friday morning in the western Iowa town of Atlantic. Firefighters were called out after lightning struck a tree, traveled down its roots, blew a hole in a gas line underground, and set fire to the gas that came spewing out of it. Atlantic Fire Chief Mark McNeese says they couldn't believe what they saw as they approached the scene.
I mean, it wasn't that big a deal, except it's just the weirdest thing. Nobody's ever seen anything like that. It ignited the gas, of course, and so right in the middle of the yard, they had this 3-foot flames coming out of the yard.
McNeese says the flames didn't cause any damage to the house nearby.
What it does is, because of the pressuring line, they shut the gas off of the house, but it ruptured it, so the force of it coming up just kept pushing it out, and it was ignited and burning off, so it couldn't continue on up the line towards the house.
He says the hole was about a foot wide with blue and gold flame jetting out. It took the local gas company crew about an hour to get the broken pipe to fix it because there were so many tree roots in the area. That wasn't exactly a red alert, but a broken mixer put a few bits of metal in the dough on Thursday at a franchise donut shop. So the Krispy Kreme in the Quad Cities announced, if you have any day-old cake-style donuts in a Krispy Kreme bag, put them down and back away slowly. The latest research on nutrition concludes no matter how healthy you're eating, you could add more fruits and vegetables to your diet. Carol Voss is a nutrition specialist for the Iowa State Department of Public Health.
The idea is, wherever you are right now in your fruit and vegetable consumption, you need to eat more. So if you're currently eating 3 servings of fruits and vegetables, then by adding a fruit or vegetable snack, you can add another serving. So the idea is, more does matter.
She says a good visual guideline is to see that your total vegetable and fruit servings cover just about half your plate. Tuesday of this week, we learned details of the latest settlement between the Catholic Archdiocese of Dubuque and a group of 9 survivors of priest abuse. Waterloo attorney Thomas Stock represents the latest accusers. He says the Archdiocese agreed to pay $2.6 million to the 9 victims.
All of these people, not only these 9, but the 20 that we represented as well, are the courageous people here. They've had the nerve, they've had the courage, they've had the intestinal fortitude to come forward and to confront this issue head on. And I should also say that almost without exception, every one of these people have felt better about doing it.
The alleged sexual abuse involved 6 priests assigned to parishes in Dubuque, Nevada, Ryan, Waterloo, and a school in Waterloo. Of those, more than one priest had been involved in previous settlements, also over abuse. The Iowa Court of Appeals has ruled that postpartum depression was not a valid defense in the case of a Des Moines woman convicted of killing her infant son. Radio Iowa's Dar Danielson reports.
Heidi Amphenson was convicted of second-degree murder in the 1998 death of her 15-day-old son, Jacob. Amphenson had claimed the boy accidentally drowned in the bathtub, but after questioning by police, Amphenson led police to the boy's body in Sailorville Lake. Amphenson was charged with first-degree murder, but following a mistrial, was convicted of the second-degree murder charge in her second trial in 2000. Amphenson appealed her conviction, saying her lawyer was ineffective because he failed to pursue an insanity defense based on postpartum depression, failed to properly explain a child endangerment plea bargain agreement, and failed to seek to suppress the written statement Amphenson gave to police. The appeals court ruled there's no authority in Iowa law for using postpartum depression as a basis for an insanity defense. The court also said if the postpartum defense could be used, it would apply to a first-degree murder conviction, and since Amphenson was found guilty of second-degree murder, the insanity defense does not apply and there was no negligence on the part of her lawyer. The court also ruled that Amphenson was not in custody when she gave the written statement to police, and the statement she gave at the time would not have impacted the outcome of the trial. As for Amphenson's claim, the plea bargain was improperly explained. The court said that claim was based on too much speculation to be decided on its merits. Radio Iowa, I'm Dar Danielson.
Several cases of mishandled money have cast a shadow over parts of Iowa's funeral home industry recently. The Iowa Senate voted Tuesday unanimously to begin licensing and regulating funeral homes and cemeteries. Senator Brian Shanejohn, a Democrat from Arlington, says he started writing up his bill after finding out his local funeral home had defaulted on thousands of dollars worth of prepaid caskets and cemetery plots, adding to the heartbreak for bereaved people.
People had to go out and actually take out notes or equity out of their house to purchase something that they'd already bought. And this is not an isolated case, and the more people I talked to, the more people I ran into that were victimized by these unscrupulous salespeople.
The measure, which still has to pass the Iowa House, would require funeral homes and cemeteries to keep a greater share of the money they collect for prepaid funerals in a trust fund. A federal judge ruled Wednesday that both of Iowa's laws about flag desecration are unenforceable. The American Civil Liberties Union has fought flag laws for years, and ACLU Iowa Director Ben Stone says one of these was 100 years old and made a lot of things illegal.
A whole laundry list. I mean, it is hundreds of words long, detailing exactly what can and cannot be done with the American flag, including that it can't be used in advertisements, it can't be put on clothing, it can't be put on coffee mugs, and indeed the magnetic stickers that you see on people's cars that have red, white, and blue and you know, stars, that can be certainly interpreted to be in violation of the Iowa statute.
The judge ruled that while that law often was not enforced at times, it was used selectively against certain people.
Leaves it open for local police to use their own political beliefs to enforce these statutes. We've only seen these statutes enforced against people who are political dissenters.
Senate Democratic leader Mike Gronstall of Council Bluffs was among those encouraging Iowa's attorney general to appeal the ruling.
We are also more than willing to look at recrafting legislation if there are significant, if we identify significant defects in our current law. Pending an appeal, we might be willing to take a look at changing that law.
House Republican leader Christopher Rance of Sioux City says a small group of GOP legislators were already at work crafting a bill to respond to the ruling.
You can count on House Republicans to, if need be, hold up this session until we get that issue corrected.
It was one state house issue they could all agree on.
Iowans treasure our flag, and we want to make sure it's protected and discourage anybody from desecrating the flag.
The challenge began when two men were charged under the laws in separate cases last summer. One flew a flag upside down to protest the treatment of veterans in some health care facilities. In both cases, the charges were dismissed. Students throughout Iowa joined their counterparts across the nation in the 12th annual Kick Butts Rally Against Smoking this week. Katie Embry of Bettendorf is a prevention specialist with Scott County's Center for Alcohol and Drug Services.
I have seven chapters of a club that's called Defy It, and stands for Drug Free Youth in Touch. And a couple of the schools made displays that showed what's actually in a cigarette. So they brought things from home, toilet bowl cleaners, and they brought in vinegar and all kinds of stuff that's actually have the same ingredients as what's in a cigarette, and we made a nice big display about those.
Rain quenched plans to decorate sidewalks with anti-smoking messages, but school kids came up with other ways to get their messages across. Youth advocates with the group GEL went to the Capitol in Des Moines. Next month, students in Knoxville plan to stage a mock trial to illustrate the evils of tobacco. A University of Iowa student who marched in the band and grew up to be a lawyer has given $50,000 to a scholarship fund that will help pay tuition for students taking part in the Hawkeye Marching Band. Cedar Falls native Judd Truax says he has fond memories of playing in the band while his wife held his music. The weekend saw a fire in a western Iowa community so hot the next day they still couldn't get in to see what caused it. Shelby County Emergency Management Coordinator Jason Wickizer says dozens of firefighters from over 30 miles away came to help fight the blaze at Hot Shots Photography.
We have 20 departments providing assistance with water, air packs, and manpower. We have ladder trucks here from Harlan, Atlantic, and Council Bluffs.
No injuries were reported. Lawmakers prepared to debate another hot potato at the State House, a bill to add sexual orientation to the Iowa Civil Rights Code. Senate Democratic leader Mike Gronstall of Council Bluffs is lead sponsor of the bill.
This legislation applies to gay people and to straight people. This legislation isn't special rights for gay people. It's equal rights for all people.
Senator Larry McKibben, a Republican from Marshalltown, is one of the opponents of the bill.
Are we creating new classifications of protected citizens that simply don't have the characteristics of someone who's identifiable as black or other or women or other minorities? And I think there's a very major concern about its impact long-term on small business.
McKibben says the issue should be left to local communities to decide. McKibben's an attorney. He says changing the civil rights code would make it easier for gays and lesbians to sue an employer who wasn't even aware of their sexual orientation. Companies in Iowa that grant so-called car title loans will soon be forbidden from charging interest rates up to 300%. Governor Chet Culver this week signed into law a bill limiting the interest rate charged on such loans to 21% or less, effective the 1st of July.
For far too long, car title lenders have preyed upon the most vulnerable Iowans.
Culver says too often the exorbitant interest rates charged on the loans made it impossible for low-income Iowans to keep up with their loan payments.
Car title lenders have looked upon these people as an easy target. Now, in many cases, a family's car can be its most important asset, both in terms of value as well as usefulness. A car is an absolute necessity for most Iowans.
Critics of the new law say it will deny some Iowans who can't qualify for any other credit the last option of a car title loan. A new entertainment venue or semi-organized bar brawls. State legislature is taking steps to ensure the state isn't liable when somebody's hurt in an ultimate fighting competition. State officials wanted to regulate the sport the same way boxing is regulated. Senator Herman Quirmbach, a Democrat from Ames, says the state should just ban it.
This extreme fighting, ultimate fighting, shoot fighting, whatever you call it, that's not a sport. It is a barbaric, disgusting, degrading and subhuman activity. It really has no place here in the state of Iowa.
But the state labor commissioner says there's no way to make the sport safe and recommended legislators change the law so the state won't be asked to foot the bill when someone's injured during an ultimate fighting bout. University of Iowa researchers looked at the people who go to treatment facilities with problems abusing stimulants like methamphetamine and prescription drugs. Researcher Dr. Tracy Gunter says a lot more white people than black made up the patient population, they found.
For instance, Caucasians may abuse synthetic substances more because of better access to health care. Again, there are as many reasons as there are both researchers and individuals abusing substances out there. But certainly I think access does have a lot to do with it.
Gunter says it could be a socioeconomic issue that reflects Iowa's 90% white population. The study found stimulant users were between the ages of 21 and 34 years old, and 43% of them are women, something that makes them ponder its effect on families. Game wardens in charge of keeping an eye on deer and keeping deer off the roads are eyeing a chemical that's essentially a deer contraceptive. Lawmakers took a look at it, too. Representative John Whitaker, a Democrat from Hillsborough, says the Department of Natural Resources doesn't have any plans to use the drug.
It's very expensive. It is an injectable hormone, which means that if they were to use it in wild populations, they would have to dart the animals, and then they wouldn't know which animals they've darted. They wouldn't know whether they had done male or females unless they're doing it at a particular time of the year. And so it becomes, the logistics of doing this are just extremely difficult.
The drug is a powerful and dangerous chemical that can affect many living things, including humans. And even holders of a pesticide license would not get access to it under a bill that cleared the Iowa House. Still, Representative Sandy Greiner, a Republican from Kyoto, worried the DNR would try to inject the drug in deer at great cost to the state.
I live in a house full of hunters, and I know how difficult it is to find the deer, and unless they're, of course, on the road, then it's easy to find them. It's not an easy thing. So are we going to now be appropriating money, hiring more FTEs for the Department of Natural Resources to go out and herd these deers into a pen so they can inject them with a birth control substance? I think it's folly.
She says she'd shoot him herself, but thinks proposing to shoot them up with deer birth control drugs is crazy. Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller's filed an environmental enforcement lawsuit this week in Winnebago County District Court against Golden Oval Eggs. Spokesman Bob Brammer says the lawsuit alleges that the production facility violated environmental laws, polluting the water with its more than 5.5 million chickens.
We allege that despite the Iowa Department of Natural Resources issuing a notice of violations and being in consultation with them and them saying that they would get things remedied, that the violations have continued. We are seeking civil penalties up to $5,000 per day per violation. And we allege numerous violations.
Golden Oval's 22 barn facility is located near Thompson. Good news about some new jobs planned for South Central Iowa, Mike Buchanan reports.
An international market research company has announced plans to open a survey research call center in Ottumwa. Centivate will locate in downtown Ottumwa in the former APAC telemarketing center once renovations has been completed. Centivate will provide employment for 300 full-time and part-time positions from entry-level to supervisors. The company selected Ottumwa after a search that was concluded in October of last year. Centivate has similar call centers in British Columbia, Fresno, California, and Miami, Florida. Centivate becomes the seventh company to either locate or to expand in Ottumwa since 2005. Mike Buchanan, Radio Iowa, Ottumwa.
Each year, thousands of Iowans head up to Canada for vacations. There may be a catch. AAA's Rose White says some Americans are being turned back at the northern border.
The Canadian government considers driving while under the influence of alcohol an extremely serious offense, so much so that if you have been convicted of this crime in the U.S., you may be prohibited from entering Canada.
White says it's no joke for those who may be heading north for fishing trips.
You know, we have a lot of people, of course, that head up to the boundary water areas, groups of fishermen, and we have heard of a few cases here recently where one or more of them have been denied access to Canada and simply had to return for their trip home.
She says it doesn't matter if you're driving your own car or not.
Also, we have heard that buses even heading into Canada, everyone on the bus will be searched and their records checked. And if there's anyone who's had a DWI offense in the last few years, they may be pulled off and might have to rent a car to head back home.
They'll check your record, she says. Other crimes like shoplifting or assault could also bar you from entering Canada. Board members from the Iowa Association of Electric Cooperatives recently met with the state's congressional delegation in Washington to talk about rail transportation costs. Roger Arthur of the Alamakee-Clayton Electric Co-op in Postville says they're concerned about increases in the cost of shipping coal from Wyoming mines to the generating plants in Iowa.
Rail costs of shipping overnight had a 95% increase, which, to put it in perspective, what it was the coal cost about what the shipping was. And in one day, the coal cost was just half of what the shipping expense was. In other words, they almost doubled the cost of transportation as to what the actual product is.
He says the electric companies are being held captive by four railroads and says the Attorney General is consulting with others about how the railroads are protected from antitrust accusations. Ever have dreams of pedaling along with Lance Armstrong? You missed your chance last summer when he rode across Iowa. But you've got another chance coming this summer. By Monday, 60 people had already shelled out $1,000 to be part of his posse when he returns to do Ragbri again this year. A new book for business managers challenges them to do the right thing, even if it conflicts with their business ethics. James Autry retired from a career at Iowa publishing giant Meredith, where he managed the magazine group.
I like to say there aren't any business ethics, there are only people ethics. And this book is about integrity, but not high up in the ether, kind of philosophical, but it's a book of stories. We asked about 30 people, what incident or episode or situation in your life or work created for you the greatest challenge to your integrity, and what did you do about it?
Autry says business managers make decisions based on what is legal, but should also consider what's ethical. Just to disclose all the facts in our story, Autry is married to former Lieutenant Governor Sally Peterson. He's written half a dozen of these business executive books, two volumes of poetry, and in April he'll publish a new one, another departure, titled Looking Around for God, The Oddly Reverent Observations of an Unconventional Christian. Iowa fans of a popular adult cartoon show have little hope of hosting the premiere of a film that'll be based on it. Creators of The Simpsons say the reason it's set in the fictional town of Springfield is that that's one of the most common names for a town. There are at least 16 around the country, 71 Springfields if you count townships and other civic venues, according to the United States Geographical Survey. 20th Century Fox has challenged all the towns to compete for the honor of hosting the movie's premiere. Folks in Springfield, Nebraska are getting excited about their bid for the red carpet event, but just among our border states, they face competition from Springfields in South Dakota, Illinois, Minnesota, and Missouri. Wisconsin and Kansas don't have any town called Springfield. I was out of luck, too, unless we could pass off our Spring Hill, Springville, Springbrook, Springdale, Spillville, or Sprageville. Radio Iowa. I'm Stella Schaffer. Later in the week, an observant historian contacted Radio Iowa to let us know we used to have a Springfield, a town in Jackson County about 30 miles west of the Mississippi River, was once called Springfield, but after checking and discovering how many others there were in the region, they changed the name to Maquoketa. You find out all kinds of things listening to the Radio Iowa podcast.